A book crossed my desk the other day, and with a title like this, we just had to have a look at it. Superfoods for a Super You. How could I resist taking a peek? The book is a list of 101 so-called superfoods that claims range from things like reversing the effect of aging, improving health and boosting energy. Well, I'll tell you what, you can, from now on, pass me a handful of goji berries and a flaxseed milkshake and I'm anyone's. But what is a superfood? And do they really do what they claim, or is it all just hype and a criminal waste of money? Catherine Saxelby is an accredited nutritionist with 25 years' experience in the industry. And Catherine, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Lovely to be here.
Now, of course, I'm feeling just tip-top with my flaxseed milkshake
yes.
and my goji berries. Am I pulling your leg, or would I be feeling better now than I would have if I hadn't taken them?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Some of these foods do worry me, as you said in your introduction, because the claims that are made for them are so amazingly over the top, you know, energy and longevity and fighting off cancer and heart disease. And
when they say talk about regrowth of hair, I'm there.
Exactly.
I'm so there.
Well, my warning bells go off if I read that something improves your sexual performance or it cures cancer. And I just think, well, yeah. There's no food that can really do that. So if I read anything along those lines, I tend to be very suspicious.
And yet, isn't it not true? Sorry to interrupt, but isn't it true that at least some of the foods that contain within this book, and you've had a look at it, are right in saying that they can help prevent cancer?
Oh, certainly. And I'm a great believer in superfoods. When you look across the range of each food group, say vegetables as a whole group, which are all incredibly nutritious and we need variety, but things like spinach and silver beet, those dark green leafy vegetables, clearly stand head and shoulders above peas and beans and carrots.
Why?
The cabbage family. Well, they're just so much higher in every nutrient. I've done a lot of comparisons. Every mineral, magnesium, potassium, phosphorus, they're much higher than any other green vegetable. The vitamin C, you can get your entire day's recommended intake of vitamin C from one small serve, half a cup of cooked spinach. B vitamins, vitamin K. Then this is one of my criteria for defining what is a superfood. They have to be naturally nutrient dense. So they have vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, fiber, standing head and shoulders above others in that group.
But Catherine, isn't it sad that we have to name them as superfoods when essentially they should be normal foods we have as part of our diet?
Yes, exactly. And I agree with you. It is a bit of marketing. It's a trend at the moment. And I have decided I'll hook my wagon to that because it makes these foods, it makes
attractive.
These natural, ordinary foods like spinach and cabbage and oats and berries and citrus fruit seem attractive to the young generations.
Well, I've just seen a commercial on television, Jamie Oliver holding up a bunch of tomatoes.
Yes.
You might have seen this for this commercial program. And it's in an American school. And he says to the children, what are these? And they don't know what they are.
Oh, yes. I've seen Jamie do that with English kids.
He holds up
a leek and the kids say, is it celery?
Well, at least they're close. It's long and green.
Long and green.
But these guys had no idea what a tomato was, let alone an eggplant or a cucumber, you know.
So, you know, I think in a sense, dietitians would say that all fruit and all vegetables and all whole grains are superfoods because they're all nutritionally good for you. But some just, to me, are better than others. And when we have an overweight, sedentary world where you can't afford to eat as much as you like, you have to make every food count. You want to get as much bang for your nutrition buck.
So pomegranate?
Pomegranate. Now, I've done a bit of research on pomegranate because I was very skeptical.
Yeah.
And pomegranate's claims do have a lot of backing. There's a lot of research done on one particular variety of pomegranate called Pom Wonderful, which a company in America not only grows, but they market as the juice. And we often see the juice here in Australia. Extremely high content of polyphenols, which is a type of antioxidant that gives the pomegranate that astringency and that bitterness, not bitterness, but that tartness when you swallow it. Have you ever tried some pomegranate juice?
I have, and I know what you're talking about. And I believe in traditional original times, that astringency was used to kill internal parasites.
Yes, and for the plant itself, those polyphenols, or tannins as they were once called, helps protect it from attack by insects. So insects will attack, say, the leaves of the olive tree are very high as well in it. They don't like it because it tastes unpleasant and
I'd prefer the pomegranate to eat rather than the olive leaves, the olive Catherine, leaf. Yes.
And yes. Tea has the same, red wine has those same type of chemical compounds. So, and they all have come under study and potential use as a superfood.
So they are, there is some validity to this. And grapefruit is another one. Grapefruit is fantastic.
It is. Well, all the citrus in my book fit in, oranges, mandarin, grapefruit, pomelo, tangelo. But grapefruit are interesting because what other fruit do you know that could actually interfere with your medicine and can strip enamel from your teeth? I mean, there's a lot of people on cholesterol-lowering medicine or high blood pressure-lowering medicine.
I'm one of them.
Who can't have grapefruit or grapefruit juice every day because it interacts and blocks the action. It actually enhances the action of your medicine, so you get twice the effect.
Oh,
so
really?
Grapefruit are pretty amazing stuff. There's warnings on every website about grapefruit juice if you take these medications. So there's not many other fruits that come close to grapefruit for that sort of medicinal action. The other group we should mention are those foods that will be familiar to you. They have been traditional folk medicine, garlic, ginger, many of the herbs like rosemary, turmeric, cinnamon, those herbs and spices that we use as culinary ingredients actually often spill over into herbal medicine. They too have medicinal effects, and I classify them as superfoods.
Well, another food that's mentioned as a superfood in this book is one that we've seen scarcely in Australia until the last few years because it hasn't been developed until a man by the name of John Foss, who sits opposite me now, brought it into this country and started growing it in the Kimberley. John is the founder and managing director of the Chia Company. And John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Chia, C-H-I-A. Tell us why the Aztecs and the Mayans thought it was just the duck's proverbials.
Well, I don't know if they understood exactly what they had on their hands, but it's the richest plant-based form of omega-3 fatty acids. So that's an essential fatty acid that the body can't produce itself. So,
which is found in fish, I think.
In fish is the EPA DHA, and the plant-based form is in chia, and chia is the richest form of that. It's also very high in dietary fibre and protein and antioxidants. So it is a complete food.
And how do you use it within cooking?
It's a very versatile seed. It really has no taste or flavour, so it can be added to anything.
But you brought some in for me.
I brought in some samples, and that's a chia shot. So that can be just sprinkled on your breakfast cereal in the morning to add the fibre and omega-3. It can be put into a juice, so it can be added to a smoothie.
Because it's soluble, isn't it?
That's it, exactly.
And it forms a gel.
Correct, yeah. So the gel fibres up into a real thick gel, and that helps in the satiety by eating chia.
Catherine, have you tried chia?
I have. I've written about it on my website. I did a bit of a review of it, Michael, and it is pretty amazing. It sits, for me, halfway between flaxseed and poppy seeds. It's got the omega-3, the ALA, as John said, which is pretty hard to find in the plant world, quite high in good fats, heap of fibre, very high in fibre. There's protein, a little bit of calcium, and it's gluten-free. So that might be of interest to people who can't have wheat and oats and barley.
Well, I've just opened up a chia shot here, and I've just spilled it all over the desk, so I'm going to be in big trouble. But there's little dark seeds, and John and Catherine, it looks so innocuous. I'm going to put some in my mouth. Is that all right, John,
if I
do that? Yeah, okay. I'm not going to
have
something
explode. It doesn't
have
much of a taste, does it, John?
It doesn't.
No.
And it comes in a black and a white seed, and one of our customers is a major bakery chain have put into a white bread, and that's enabled them to put the nutrition of chia into white bread that children can't see, and they're still choosing to eat the white bread, but having great success by selling a chia bread.
And why, John, are you growing it in the Kimberley? Why there particularly?
Chia's a photosensitive crop, so to get the omega-3 ratio in the oil, it has to be grown at the right latitude. And that's around the globe, around 15 degrees from the equator. And so that's why it originally grew in central Mexico and in South America. And that same latitude runs through the Kimberley region of Western Australia.
And just in a few short years, you've managed to become the largest chia producer in the world, haven't you?
Yeah, like with a lot of these ancient grains, there's great demand for them. But one of the limitations has been commercial production and the quality systems and the repeatability and the confidence for food companies to be able to include it in their products. So something that we've really focused on is having the quality management and the systems to be able to do that. And so it's allowed us to be able to grow really quickly and supply food companies all around the world.
Well, I've just been munching on it as you've been talking, and it's got a slightly nutty flavour, and I can see why it would be a great additive to food if it's got all these attributes and yet doesn't contribute to any sort of flavour diminution or, I don't know, contamination.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we've seen it in yoghurts and dairy products. There's a new range of bars being launched with it, and as I said, in the bread products.
Well, look, Catherine, John, we've only just touched on chia. We've talked about pomegranates and we've talked about grapefruit, and I talked about goji berries and flaxseed. So some of these things obviously do have attributes. Whether they're going to reverse aging, only time will tell. I'm putting a webcam up in my house for everyone to look in on and see how different I become in the next few months just from eating chia and goji berries. In the meantime, thank you both very much indeed. And Catherine, just very quickly, I'd take it you'd advocate some of these superfoods as being part of our diet every day.
Yes, I do.
Great. Well done. Catherine Saxelby, accredited nutritionist with the online resource called Food Watch, and John Foss, who's been a farmer for a long time and founder and managing director of the Chia Company. Thank you both very much indeed. And that's Bush Telegraph for this morning.